Good day and welcome to this Greenland or Dreamland discussion sponsored by PSG Wealth. In today's episode, we're going to be asking the question, why has Greenland suddenly captured global attention with its tiny population, vast size, and reports of U.S. interests? We explore the history, strategic value, and potential resources that make this icy island a surprising hotspot in geopolitics. My name is Mbudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day. And I'll be your host for this conversation. And joining me is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG. That is Adrian Pask. Adrian, always good to talk to you.
Hi, Mbudiwa. Good to chat to you. Looking forward to the podcast.
Now, Adrian, much has been, you know, reported about Trump's bid for Greenland. Some people are genuinely concerned, while others dismiss it as unlikely. But what's really behind this fuss? I think that's the key question for us. And what does the evidence actually say, you know, about the idea, you know, of the U.S., you know, buying Greenland? Why has Greenland attracted, you know, U.S. attention, you know, to this extent?
I think it is it's a very interesting topic of debate because it's really sparked quite a lot of interest. It's almost like your first impression is, why on earth would the US be interested in Greenland? But as soon as you start looking into the matter, there's quite a few interesting things. But maybe just as context, it's actually quite a substantial geographical area. So more or less the same size as the three largest US states. So it's quite large, but the interesting thing, and as you would expect, not very densely populated. So there's roughly 56,000-57,000 Greenlandic residents living on the continent. So it begs the question, but what is then happening there that's created all this interest, especially considering that the U.S. population is 340 million, a far more substantial economy. But the history behind it is actually going back to World War II, and then shortly following that, the establishment of NATO, which we know is a sensitive point for Trump, but then also the discussions during the Cold War. So essentially, that area of the world, given the tensions between the US and the USSR, it became quite an important area strategically from a defense point of view. And the US actually had more or less 6,000 service staff, defense service staff, stationed on Greenland during that period. Today, it's the reports say it's roughly 150 people. So you can see there was a clear moving back move in terms of deploying service members there, and less interest over time as the world became a safer place, a more peaceful place, up until we saw what happened with Ukraine and Russia, and then all the subsequent tensions from there. But what was agreed is that there could be a military base, as I've mentioned, and that military base is essentially there to do two things at the moment. It's an early detection center for missile launches around that area. And then there's several space-related projects, so monitoring debris and that kind of thing. But largely, the key interest is about the strategic positioning and being in a position where you can either defend or, heaven forbid, attack. Where the story has now sort of picked up a couple of new nuances is where there's mention of potential mineral and rare earth deposits. But our sense from looking at the research is that's definitely a secondary point. I mean, the confirmed resources, they are actually quite modest. There's actually only two active mines in the area. And even if there is these potential mineral and rare earth deposits, it will take a meaningful period of time to actually unearth those and get any meaningful economic value. I mean, this runs into the decade. So they say roughly 20 to 40 years before you will get any economic benefits. So that far outlives Trump. So that wouldn't be, for me, his immediate thinking. I think he's very much thinking about the defense strategy component. The other component that's also mentioned and also been proposed as an idea for why the US could be interested is the ice caps melting. There seems to be opening shipping routes in the area as well, which can become strategically and commercially more important. But also there, it will take between 10 and 20 years to fully scale those up into something that could be commercially viable over time. So there's the immediate benefit. It seems, given the amount of urgency that Trump is looking at this, the only immediate benefit that he could really can establish there would be from a defense point of view. So I think that's the main reason driving all the discussions and proposals.
Now, Adrian, now that we have an idea of the strategic value importance of Greenland, we have an idea of some of the history that has led to, you know, where things are, the different interests in that particular geography and the different projects that are happening there. When we look at the moment that we're in now, I think it's safe to assume that a couple of years from now, we're going to be looking at this as a key moment in history around, you know, Greenland as it pertains to global geopolitics. What are some of the other, you know, key historical episodes where the U.S. has considered, you know, buying Greenland in the past? What else has stuck out, you know, in this geography's history?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because I think we live in a time where most of us have lived through in a long historic context in quite peaceful times, and the purchase of another country seems quite radical in the environment that we grew up in or live in today until now. But if you actually look at what's happened historically between the US and Greenland, and again, looking at the history, it's actually going back as early as 1868. The Secretary of State for the US at the time was also floating the idea of buying actually both Greenland and Iceland. So it's not a completely new idea. But something slightly more recently is going back again between that period where World War II ended and the Cold War started. There was a formal offer on the table for exactly this in 1946, and the U.S. offered to buy Greenland for $100 million in gold. Now, gold is another thing that's quite topical at the moment, and if you were to do the conversion into today's gold price, that's roughly $1.7 billion in gold that was offered for purchase. Eventually, they debated it and they settled on it's not a viable idea. And that was actually the start of the base I previously mentioned, that Idufik space base that they utilized for the space projects and the early missile detection that I mentioned before. So there's quite a lot of history around this transaction, and it's not completely unheard of as we commonly think today.
So when we then think about where we are now, like you said, this is not something new that's being floated. There have been a couple of times where, you know, deal values had been on the table. Like you said, that $100 million worth of gold that had been on the table once upon a time. Given where we are right now, how big are the proposed or implied deal values compared, you know, with the economies of the U.S., Denmark, and Greenland? What do you make of, you know, perhaps what's being offered today versus what had been on the table before?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So again, a bit of speculation, I think, out there at the moment. The interesting thing is that Trump himself never actually proposed any specific numbers. So I think he's being quite cagey around the idea. But the problem is there's always senior officials that speak about things that they maybe shouldn't in public. And it seems like an idea that was floated around internally was actually paying each Greenlander an amount of between $10,000 and $100,000, which again seems like a very interesting concept, of things we haven't heard of before. Now, if you go back to, remember, there's roughly 57,000 Greenlanders and you pay them $100,000 each, you come to a fairly modest $5.7 billion in a deal. The interesting thing there is, if that deal settles, it's super unlikely. It's well below some of the other estimates, because I mean, some of the other estimates that were made were, well, you previously offered the 100 million in gold reserves to, in today's terms, that would be, 1.7 billion. So, the offer seems ludicrous. In terms of how big the deal is, I think it's best to contextualize it against GDP impact. We report GDP growth numbers around 1 or 2% with regularity. So the community, the investment community, is super sensitive in moves of 0.5% in either direction. So it might not be big in the context of the US economy, for example, but in Denmark's economy, it would be substantial. So maybe the best way to look at it is, say, for example, it's anybody's guess, but say, for example, they settle on something like 500 billion. That's exactly Denmark's entire GDP. So that means if that money falls in their hands, they've essentially built a whole new economy the size of the existing one, and they've got 100% GDP growth. In the US, obviously, they've got this massive economy around $29 trillion. But even a deal size of 500 billion would be 1.5 to 2%. So if they spend that money, it would wipe off GDP growth. So technically, they go into a recession because they've overspent. It depends on how you interpret these numbers, but they are quite substantial. I mean, in Greenland's own numbers, that could be incredibly substantial because obviously it's a very small economy, even in relation to Denmark's. So from a US resident's perspective, they might say, well, it's small change, but it's actually quite meaningful in terms of what the impact on GDP could be. Because remember, like I said, there isn't any immediate payoff in terms of unlocking natural resources or opening shipping lines. That stuff is only coming decades into the future. In fact, if you into the transaction for strategic benefit from a defense point of view, all of a sudden you've got to invest quite heavily over and above the acquisition price to build out defense force there. And at the same time, you're now in charge of the country. You've got to maintain roads, you've got to put infrastructure around, and all those things cost money. So from a commercial point of view, it makes little sense for the US. They'll actually be negatively impacted over the short term from this transaction.
So, Adrian, let's peer into an alternate reality where something like this actually happens and money exchanges hands, and maybe a deal amount is reached. Trump finally tells us how much he's willing to pay. People on the other side are like, "All right, cool, we're good with that. We can proceed with the transaction." The US Fed or whoever's, signing this check, it does what they do, and then they hand over the money, right? If money actually changes hands, right, who actually gets paid? I think you gave us that calculation about what happens if every person on the island gets, I think you said, 100,000 or something like that, the 5 billion. But who actually gets paid, and what are the GDP implications?
I think in practice, any payment would almost certainly go to the Danish state. But the Greenlanders would demand a large share, whether that is via trust funds or investment programs or guarantees. There's currently 20% of Greenland's GDP comes from Denmark in the form of a grant. You would suspect that they would look at something like that. But it's always interesting to think about these things and what the consequences could be. But why I do think it is a bit of dreamland is you can hear it's a very complicated transaction. There's many different valuations with wide ranges. Anything could happen. Greenlanders have indicated their dissatisfaction with even the discussion proceeding, and so have Denmark. So there's a lot happening there. And also remember, those people are very important in this discussion. Like, politicians can't just move over them. As much as what we sometimes think, the politicians determine what we do. Greenland voters would need to approve any change of the status, which I think is unlikely. And even if it does happen, then Greenland's parliament will also need to sign it off, as well as Denmark's government. Three opposing entities all needed to get this done. And it looks unlikely. And even if it goes through there, it's also worth remembering that on the US side, they would need to have a treaty negotiated by the president and ratified by at least two-thirds of the Senate. And then even if you get that done, all the funding required needs to be approved by Congress. So you can tell it's complicated. There's a lot of ifs and buts, but it's such an interesting idea and concept that it's worth exploring the details of it. But unfortunately, or fortunately, actually, I do think it is a case of dreamland, not greenland.
You and I often talk about signal versus noise. In a world so crowded with so many different things coming at, investors and people trying to make capital allocation decisions, is this Greenland affair, something you just mentioned just now, that it might be more of dreamland than, something actually happening. But from a market player's point of view, is this something that's actually, forming how people are viewing, perhaps their geopolitical risk models, how they're approaching, future GDP calculations, whatever it is that could fit into this? Are market players taking this as something serious, or is this literally a wait and see? If it's something happens, then we'll deal with it then, or for now we just wait to see if anything happens at all?
I think the important thing here is not so much the detail that we're fascinating over, like, the will the transaction take place. The things not to be doing now is looking for commodity businesses in Greenland to invest in. But the great irony for me through the whole process is it's gone through a process of alienating NATO, but that will necessitate some fixing of the relationship with NATO. So it's interesting how he sort of painted himself as the anti-NATO representative, while he's actually quite reliant on them to achieve what he wants to achieve with defense. So that's interesting. But like I say, I think the key message is geopolitical risk is becoming a really big driver of things. And it's no longer a non-event from an investment perspective. Not too long ago, we were living in an environment where there were isolated flare-ups with US tensions in the Middle East, and you would have a spike in oil prices, and the dollar would appreciate and safe haven assets would rally. It would be relatively short-lived and the world would move on to whatever's next and what we're reading about. Where the tone and the context in which we're operating now is there's this continuous bombardment of geopolitical tensions. And at the same time, an individual that's willing to explore various, very transparent ideas quite candidly, which isn't necessarily helpful for preserving the peace in spite of what's being advocated. So there's definitely risk there, and it can't be ignored, and it's something that should be looked at. And I think, it's the old cliche of just making sure that these things feature into your thinking and making sure that you're sufficiently diversified. I don't think it's something that you can approach opportunistically. You'll remember last year we saw Europe announced that they're going to spend more money on defense, and all the defense stocks started to rally. You'll see flare-ups of similar things maybe. So, there might be one or two smaller opportunities, but I think the bigger thing is to make sure that you protect it from a risk perspective. I think that's really the most important thing investors can keep in mind for now. I wouldn't be thinking about exploring new ideas for how to make a quick buck out of this environment. It's more of a cautious mindset environment than an opportunistic one.
All right. On that cautious note, that's where we end off today's discussion, just getting a sense for what's going on around the U.S.'s interest in acquiring Greenland. We don't often, talk about this type of a transaction where a country is being bought, but, that is the environment that we are finding ourselves in. One of the big things that Adrian is just talking about in this discussion is the fact that some of these geopolitical discussions are really, really feeding a little bit more into the type of thinking that's going on out there. We can't ignore that it's really becoming a bigger driver for how investment decisions are being made, and something that investment professionals need to be aware of and just keeping an eye on. For now, he is just talking about the fact that there's a lot that would still need to happen before, something like this even happens. We don't even have a deal value or amount on the table. But just feeding into some of the, speculation, around some of the potential ways in which a deal like this could be done, started off by laying out the relationship between Greenland and the U.S. and also just getting a sense of in the past some of the instances in which the U.S. has tried to buy Greenland. Is this going to be the time that something like that actually does happen, or will this end up being another footnote in history when it comes to this particular narrative? Also talking about if money is to actually exchange hands, where does it go? And then ending off just talking about the implications from a GDP point of view as well as a financial markets point of view. How should people be sitting and thinking about this? And, what are some of the things that we'll be waiting to see going forward? So on that note, that's where we end off what has been a very fascinating, dive into the world of geopolitics as well as some of the history that has shaped, pieces of the modern economy. And thank you so much to Adrian for joining us for today. Adrian, always good to talk to you. So that brings us to the end of this podcast on Greenland or Dreamland, sponsored by PSG Wealth. I've been your host, Mudiwa Gavaza of The Business Day. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on Spotify, Play.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.